Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly, and I'm joined today by Katie Balls, The Spectator's deputy political editor, and James Mills, the former senior strategic advisor to Jeremy Cormid and former director of communications to the Shadow Chancellor and Shadow Treasury team. Now, this week is the 120th anniversary of the birth of the Labour Party, and how better to celebrate it, you might think, than to hear from one of the party's most successful living leaders. As to mark the occasion, former Labour leader Tony Blair took part in a Q&A today, where he discussed the future of the Labour Party and its ongoing leadership contest, saying it was a make-or-break moment for the party after losing 4 general elections in a row. Now, James, to get us started off, I think it's quite striking that Blair refused to sort of endorse any of the Labour leadership candidates because it said it would sort of do them damage. How much do you think they'll be listening to his advice then, do you think?
On the 120th anniversary of the Labour Party, nothing would be better than internal fighting in the Labour Party. the history is anything to go by. I think that sort of says a lot about where Tony Blair is. I mean, I think his comments in particular where he says, like, you know, I'm the only person born in the last 120 years who's actually won an election for Labour. I mean, the problem with that whole logic, and why people, because as much as you normally hear about the cult of Corbyn, in the majority of my time in the Labour Party, the cult of Blair existed long before. And you can argue that legitimately there's a reason for that given his success. But, and this is why I say the but bit, is because context matters. When he last fought an election, it was before you had things like social media and before you had many of the attributes that are mainstays of modern party politics. And I find it, you know, I think, as I said, all Labour members should have their voices and opinions heard, but I do think we have to put them in context. And the real problem for that wing of the party is that, if I was honest with you, is that they don't really offer anything new. The reason why Corbyn sort of took everyone before him and why we did so well in 2015, I worked on both those campaigns, was because they were offering solutions to many of the problems that affected people in society, and particularly at the time Labour Party members, who, although people would like to normally say are sort of apart from the rest of the country, when Ed Miliband talked about the squeezed middle, you will find many of those squeezed middle sort of demographics similar in Labour Party memberships. And people don't like to admit this, but it's true. And most of the studies done by people into party membership show this, by the way, that they tend to be sort of middle class, mainly women, the new members from post-2015, and people who are sort of in that squeezed middle or not, or I think the academics call them sort of the left behind group. And that was the reason why Corbyn did so well. He offered something, an alternative. And the thing with that sort of wing of the Labour Party, the reason why they're not doing very well, and the reason why Jess Phillips and everyone sort of have fallen by the wayside and sort of, you know, and Liz Kendall, is they don't offer anything new and an alternative. And, like, the reason why I say that matters, you have to put forward policy. And you know, is because if you look last summer when Boris Johnson did so well, you have to like Boris Johnson. I don't personally, or his politics. But if you go back to last summer, what did he do? He offered the alternative. His alternative was a free trade agreement. It was a very clear policy. You didn't have to agree with it, but it's a very clear policy. And he took all before him with a clear alternative, and he won. And then obviously he went on to be Prime Minister. And that's why in these contests, it really matters. I mean, I'm quite upset with the Labour Party contest because I don't think it's rigorous enough. I don't think it's tested any of the people going for leadership. But I don't think you're going to win the party's leadership if you don't have any sort of discernible policies or things you can put forward to advocate and defend. And even if you listen to Tony Blair today, his main thing that's been the big takeaway is about joining the Lib Dems. You know, for those of you who follow these things, if you've read Philip Gould's book, it's a very good book, by the way, and he's one of the architects of that sort of early Blairism, that was the central policy in that. I mean, so to put it in context, that's a book that was published in 1999. I read it when I was a student. That's how long ago it was. And I think that's the central problem for them.
Tony Blair did sort of offer some advice to the candidates about future policy. I mean, he particularly touched upon this idea of culture wars or identity policy and advised, I think he singled out immigration and transgenderism as, in particular, sort of battles Labour shouldn't be fighting. Do you think there's something to that advice or it will be listened to?
Again, the fact that he didn't want to name any specific candidate, but he did say they would all be an improvement on Corbyn, shows that Tony Blair has some self-awareness in the level of influence he wields on the current Labour Party. He did talk about culture wars, but I think what was interesting is he did stress the need to focus on winning power and how that should be something that any Labour leader aspires to. He stressed how he and Harold Wilson were the only two people born within Labour's 120-year history who have won an election for the party. But the thing I thought was interesting was when he talked about going back to power, one of the things that he was talking about was whether or not Labour should work with the Liberal Democrats. Mm. Now, he was saying they should. And there was a strong suggestion that the only route back to power, from Tony Blair's perspective right now for the Labour Party, if you look at the historic defeat in the general election, would be by finding a like-minded party where you have more in common than not, and seeing how you can work together. Now, he was asked, are you suggesting a formal pact? He said he hadn't thought that far ahead. But I do think it's an interesting one if you think about the various candidates, because the Liberal Democrats at the moment are also in a very difficult place following their defeat in the general election. But they did decide to not have their own leadership contest until the Labour leader had been selected. And I think that if you listen to some of the things some of the candidates in the Liberal Democrat leadership contest who expect to put themselves forward, and bear in mind they actually only need one Lib Dem MP to back them, so we could have quite a few, they are talking about whether or not you can work with Labour. Now, Jeremy Corbyn was too divisive a figure to be able to be someone lots of Liberal Democrat MPs could work with the last time around. But I do think if you have a candidate like Keir Starmer, it's easier to see where there might be common ground. But there's another but, which is, if you have a candidate like Keir Starmer, there is a sense that he might find it more difficult in seats in the so-called red wall. Mm. And actually, he might naturally be able to win Lib Dem voters over, you know, switches. So at that point, would you want to team up with the Liberal Democrats, or would you want to just try and take their votes?
I mean, James, it's a fair point that the path to power for Labour is going to be quite difficult now, having, you know, essentially lost Scotland. Do you think that's realistic as well, in terms of it might be a necessity to go into a pact, as Blair advises, with the Lib Dems?
I mean, I agree that the path is very tough. I mean, I had an existential crisis. I wrote a 7,000-word essay after the election. So that's how passionate I felt about it. I mean, look, I mean, one thing I'd say, if I was going to put a positive spin on it, is that the challenge Labour face is the same challenge that David Cameron faced when he took over the leadership of the Labour Party. In fact, we have more seats now than he had. But what David Cameron did quite well, and to be fair, he benefited from sort of the global financial crisis and played his cards quite well, is that although we might select a leader, it's going to be a long haul. It's another 5 years. So the first 2 or 3 years, we're going to be pretty much ignored as a party. It'll be all about internal fighting in the Tory party, as you've seen the last few weeks. It'll probably be the mainstay. And the national press will come back to us fleeting moments. So what you need to do in that time, I think, personally, is build that vision of where you want to take the country, and then build, and I think, I do agree with Tony Blair on the sensation that we need to root and branch reform the Labour Party, probably just not the way he sees it. Because I think we need to update our party for the 21st century. We have many old practices behind the scenes, and also at the coal face of the electioneering, that we need to really radically change if we're going to compete as a 21st century party against the Conservative Party, let alone make that massive hike back up. So, I mean, I do think we do. And when it comes to the Liberal Democrats, my personal view is that the Labour Party is the only coalition in town. The Liberal Democrats polling 6%. Are we going to face the same situation in 2024? I mean, I'm more worried about taking on the SNP in Scotland than I am necessarily of cozying up to Lib Dems, who for many of our voters, especially in that part, are associated with as a party of government of austerity that pushed through many of the cuts that many of the voters in places like Scotland will have to win back, where, you know, the Liberal Democrat brand is pretty much toxic. My personal view is the Liberal Democrats need to sort themselves out rather than us helping them sort themselves out. And I've never been a big fan of the sort of alliance that people talk about, because at the end of the day, that's great when you have proportional representation, but whether we like it or not, we have the electoral system we have. And if you think Boris Johnson's going to change it, then, you know, I've got a bridge to sell you. So we're going to have to fight a first past the post election. That means we have to build a big coalition of the Labour Party. And if we want to get into tactical alliances in certain places and withdraw candidates, fine. But we should also bear in mind that the way the Labour Party came to power over 100 years ago was by electoral appliance of a bigger party, which was the Liberals at the time. So these things can have negative trade-offs if you're not careful.
And in terms of, you know, learning lessons from the 2019 election, there did seem to be a bit of a movement, maybe perhaps from Blair today, do you think, on Brexit, and whether it was a mistake for him to push for a Remain position. Do you think that's fair, or was it less clear than that?
Well, I'm honest, my personal view was we should never have fought the last general election, because it was always going to be a Brexit election. The polling out by Ipsos Mori this week just confirms that, in my view. You know, and we were never going to have a united position on that. The time for that was, if I was honest, was probably in 2017 or 2018. And once that was missed, we should have fought tooth and nail not to fight that last election. I don't buy into this sort of view that if we'd been all sort of a Lexit position or all of a Remain position, we would have like somehow stopped Boris Johnson, when he had a clear united coalition around that one point, our better tactic would have been, in my humble view, and as you've seen sort of the start of this year, was more of a containment strategy and sort of wait him out and try and wait till that coalition started to break. The Labour Party does need to unite. I mean, the problem is that I worked in Scotland for the party, and the problem you have up in Scotland is that sometimes civil war, and I think the Tories have probably got this, becomes almost sort of a natural sort of default setting, and that you become almost happy in internal fighting. And I'm fear for the Labour Party that if we're not careful, our default setting will be to take lumps out of each other and to get into this silly fighting that you used to have in the Tory party. You know, and people forget this, when David Cameron first became leader, he was being attacked by Margaret Thatcher. So you do have this, and equally Boris Johnson, Theresa May, when they took over the leadership, got attacked by Wings. But it's whether or not you can sort of quell that fighting and then put forward a united vision. And I think when we did quite well in 2017, we was able to die down on that internal fighting for a short period of time and set out an alternative path, and we got very close. We didn't win, but we did get very close. And I think the Labour Party should take lessons from that, and the positives that if we stop fighting each other and set out that vision, that's the one we've got the most chance of winning and getting back into the game, to be honest with you. But it's going to be a long run. I mean, I think I tipped on your podcast back in December, Lisa and Andy getting on the ballot and having a very good contest. It looks like she is.
There we go. And it's why we've got you back.
And more generally on the Labour leadership race, Katie, how are things going for the different candidates?
Well, I think as has been a theme over the past couple of weeks, it still looks as though it's very much Keir Starmer's to lose. And I think that the sense that he is going to win increases with every day. He's had a helpful endorsement overnight from ex-Corbyn aide and Momentum chief Laura Parker, who's backing Keir Starmer. Now, Keir Starmer has managed to win over some Corbyn supporters, but Rebecca Long Bailey is seen as the continuity Corbyn. She's offended by that as a tagline to her, but she is very much perceived as that. She gave Jeremy Corbyn 10 out of 10 for his performance as Labour leader, despite the election result. But I think the fact that he is having someone involved with Momentum, even though Momentum have officially backed Rebecca Long Bailey, does show that he is cutting through on the left. And it also perhaps is a vindication of his strategy, which is, although he has had a lead in recent weeks, he has kept lurching left. So last week he put forward lots of pledges that he was going to promise to bring in, and one of the things was to stick by axing tuition fees, a Corbyn policy. He's also talked about various ways he'd want to deal with illegal wars and action, and it seemed very much playing to the left of the party. I think the fact that he has this, now she said in her endorsement she's doing it because she knows he would never move away from those pledges. I think the question is, if everything goes as we expected, what is Keir Starmer going to actually be able to do, and what is he going to want to do when he's Labour leader? Because it might just be that all these people on the centre right of the party have misplaced their hopes that Keir Starmer is their saviour, and actually Keir Starmer is going to be much closer to Jeremy Corbyn than Tony Blair. There are reports that Ed Miliband could be Keir Starmer's shadow chancellor. Now, if that is the case, what type of Labour government are we heading to? I think we are heading to a government which is to the left of Ed Miliband's, perhaps not quite as left as Jeremy Corbyn's, which for some I think will be an improvement, but it's definitely not what everyone who was backing Keir Starmer initially thought.
And finally, moving on to the Tory party and perhaps continuing the theme of internal civil wars, there have been reports this morning that the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, has fallen out with her own department, particularly her most senior civil servant, and she is being accused of bullying. Katie, how significant is this row?
Well, I think these are serious allegations against Priti Patel. This is a story that was bubbling away at the weekend, and the Times have taken it further today. There have been reports of the stress that various civil servants in Priti Patel's office have been under, and the idea there's a clash. Now, one of the quotes in one of these articles is suggesting that the difference between her and her most senior civil servant is that he respects the law and she doesn't, which gives you a sense of where the tensions are running. Is this a big problem for Priti Patel? I think being accused of bullying is never a good look for a politician, and it can lead to misconduct allegations and perhaps procedure. But right now, I think it's a bit too early to tell exactly where this is going. But I think in terms of the Home Office, we are potentially looking at a clash between the civil service and the government, something we had expected in terms of tensions. But if it's not just a clash in approach, if it's about behaviour, intimidating behaviour towards staff, then I think it is going to put the Home Secretary in a difficult position.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.